This episode is brought to you by Twizzlers. Long day, late night, feeling a little bored? Twizzlers is the ultimate sidekick for any moment of the day, no matter what kind of day you're having. The perfect level of sweet and a fun excuse to sit back and relax. Unwind with Twizzlers. To buy now, visit Hersheyland.com/Twizzlers.
Sergeant and Mrs. Smith, you're going to love this house.
Is that a tub in the kitchen?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
Ow. Those uncomfortable things we do for beauty.
Oof. Ouch.
And when it comes to whiter teeth, same story. Until now. Enjoy rinse-free whitening with new Sensodyne Clinical White. You'll get clinically proven whitening technology in an enamel-safe formula for two shades whiter teeth and 24/7 sensitivity protection. Sensodyne Clinical White, a whiter smile without the rinse.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
And we are live. And hello to Renee
hello.
M. LaTulipe.
C'est moi.
And for once, I'm delighted to interview somebody from the Mediterranean. We can almost lean across and touch each other. I mean, most of the people I interview, I would have to travel 10 or 12 hours or 14. You, I can just, you know, come to, I don't know, Tuscany and just rent a car and I'll be there in 2 hours.
There I am.
So
come on over.
Incredible to meet you. You have a, you know, your name goes before you, beside you, and behind you. We're going to talk about your name. And I'm so honored to have you on the show. We're going to talk about your life, your career, your thoughts, your unique combinations. Especially, we're going to talk about The Crab Ballet, your recent book with Cameron Books, part of Abrams. How incredible that you happen to have it on hand.
Isn't that a coincidence? Huh?
Serendipitous, if there ever was.
Yeah, synchronicity.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We're going to talk about your life and your name and your career. And I have to remind everybody, because sometimes I forget, that my name is Mel Rosenberg, and I am the host of the Children's Literature Channel of the New Books Network. And that is why we're here. Renee, welcome to the interview.
Thank you so much. I am really so pleased for the invitation and to meet you for the first time live. Your name also precedes you. So I have definitely seen you around. I've seen your interviews. And I'm so pleased to be here. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's funny, like you say to be here, but you're actually there. I'm so happy to be there. Yeah.
I'm happy to be here on this computer world.
Ah, okay, absolutely. So enough of the niceties.
Yes.
First of all, tell us where your name comes from. Renee M. LaTulipe. Qu'est-ce que c'est?
Yes, it's quite French, isn't it? It's Renee Marie LaTulipe. It's super duper French. I think both sides of my grandparents, maternal and, or at least one of the maternal and both paternal grandparents came down from Canada, I believe. I've tried to piece this together, those ancestry.com and everything. And I can't get that far back, unfortunately, but it would seem that they've come down from Quebec. So somebody somewhere was definitely French. I have LaTulipe on my father's side and his mom was La Rochelle. And on my mom's side, her mom was Jean-Thérèse Godet, you know, quite French. There's this whole Frenchy thing, which I feel very akin to. I feel, I always felt very much that I was born, on the wrong continent, you know? But my first name, Renee, my oldest sister was named because my mom always wanted a little girl named Debbie. And my older brother, Don, is named after my father's brother. And my younger brother is named after my mother's brother. And my name was chosen off a list. So I'm named after no one. I was almost Jennifer. But here I am. And I always said, you know, thanks, mom and dad, because I like my Frenchy name. So yeah, that's where that comes from.
So you're almost a Canadian.
I'm almost a Canadian. Yeah.
I would sing for you, "O Canada" in French, but "Je me ne souviens pas." Je ne me souviens pas. Oh, Canada, da, 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 les fleurs en glorie.
You are a man of many talents.
Yeah, I was singing the Canadian anthem in French. Is not one of them, dear. show everybody your incredible book. Now, I fell in love with this book. I'm going to have to come to Italia and get a signed copy. This is a gorgeous book. It combines what I love teaching people, which is thinking between the boxes. You have at least three boxes here. You have the box of the sea, which you love. You have the box of poetry, which you love. You have the box of children's books, which you love. And you have the box of ballet, which you love. You're a theater girl. We're never going to get everything into one interview. Start at the beginning. I was born. Where were you? Ah, no. Start with the book. Show us some of your gorgeous book. It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous.
Thank you. Okay, so what are we starting with? The book?
Let's start with the book. It's your show.
Let's start with the book. All right, this book, all right, The Crab Ballet, started as a poem that I wrote for a March Madness poetry contest run by Ed DeCaria quite a few years ago, like in 2015 or something like that. And I had to write a poem using the word iridescence. Like he assigned a word and we had 36 hours to write a poem. It was a contest. And so I got six stanzas that came out, which are fairly much intact in the book, in the final book. But then of course, over the years I expanded it before submitting it, starting to submit it through my agent. And yeah, and it just sort of went. So there was already ballet in the original poem. Yeah, I just pictured these crabs. You know, many years ago, I was an exchange student in Brazil. I lived in Brazil for a year. And I remember being on the beach. And, you know, I grew up in the country. So, I'm not a beach person. So there I am on the beach in Brazil. And I see all these little holes, the waves go back and all these little tiny holes, and these little crabs pop out and they go skittering sideways back and forth. Right. And I was kind of freaked out. Yeah, exactly. They look like giant spiders to me. So I was kind of freaked out. I didn't really see the poetry in it at the moment, but that image always stuck with me. And I have to thank those Brazilian crabs who were skittering around all around my chair.
And let's say thank you. Muito obrigado, Brazilian crabs.
Muito obrigado. Yes, I don't remember how to say crabs, but in Portuguese. But thank you to the Brazilian crabs. So I think that image is, you know, was the impetus. It has always stuck with me. And so this became about the crabs. And, you know, because they're up on point, right? They're on point. So there they are. All they need are little ballet shoes and they're all set. And it just expanded to include more sea life and more ballet terms. I added more ballet terms as I went along. As you mentioned, I am a theater girl. I'm not a dancer at all. I'm just an admirer of all of the arts. And my little girl does ballet, and I'm just tickled pink that she does. You know, something that I would have done.
Pink.
Yes, tickled pink, and so that's where the book came about. That was it.
Now feed our great curiosity and show us the spread and read one of your beautiful poems.
All right,
talk about this marvelous illustrator. Who's also from Europe.
Yes, she's French. She's French.
She's really French. She's actually French.
Yeah, she's super French. Cecile Metzger. Check her out on Instagram too, because I just love her stuff. It's just, I mean, look at this cover. Look at it. Ah. You know, she does watercolors. I started watercolors about 3 years ago. And I just fell in love with it. And so when I found out that they were going to do watercolors for the illustrations, which of course to me would be the only choice, obviously, And I was just absolutely thrilled when I got the first look-see at this whole thing. And yeah, I mean, the detail.
Renee, show us pictures.
The detail that she has in every page is just amazing to me. All these little plans and the color scheme and her crabs. Okay, I have to show you the crabs. My favorite page, right? It's just a whole bunch of crabs in ballet positions.
I love it. Know?
I just absolutely adore this. I go through and I'm like, okay, first position, here's a tendu, here's a plié. So cute. And the little eyes, you know, that stick up there. I just adore them. And okay. I'm not going to show you the middle of the book because people who haven't read it, there's a little surprise in the middle. Here, I'll read this one. This is the beginning of Act Two. All right. We've got this whole page of
okay. So we're not allowed to tell everybody what's in the middle of the book.
Oh, well, did you want to?
For sure. I thought it was genius.
Okay. Well, then we'll do it. I'll read that.
No, because you talked about Act Two and you know.
Right. All right. Well, I'll back up a little bit. All right. So the stars of the show are the crabs, right? And here they are all getting ready to, you know, go on stage. And then we go on stage. I'm coming into the middle of this. So this is it, like near the end of Act One. Pas de bourrée leaps in midair, landing soft as mermaid's hair. Dramatic fish dives finish low, then pointed feet sweep round à terre. Now claws aloft in fifth position, side chassé in repetition. Pirouettes. First fast, then slow. Cymbals crash. Intermission.
Genius.
Yeah, and I just love that, you know, they just allowed it to be just that. Because I was concerned, you know, as a writer, you're never quite sure what the publisher is going to end up doing. But I was just like, I was just so happy that they stopped with this. And I did have a little suggestion that she have one creature there, and the creature is actually this little crab is like, it looks like he's pulling up the sea as a curtain, you know, kind of looking out at the audience. I just think that's charming. So yes, so they left my intermission as is, made me very happy. And the first one, it was just a tiny little word here, and I was like, no, let's intermission. So
you're a bit of a hands-on art director here.
Yes, I can be annoying. No, they asked. Okay. They asked. I said, okay, you're asking me how many notes can I actually give? You know? And I gave a lot of them. Yeah, I have a little bit of that as well in my, you know, sort of graphics and stuff like that in my background through my work and whatever. So yeah, I have sort of cultivated a bit of an eye for that as well. But the illustrator, Cecile, was so wonderful. When she sent the, what do you call that? The first, I've lost the vocabulary. The first sketches or whatever it was. She sent them with her thought process for each one so that we could understand like what she was thinking. And it was just wonderful. I mean, she was just fabulous. So it was wonderful to be able to answer to that. And yeah, it was just a real great collaboration. Yeah. I got very lucky.
Cecile, if you're watching, écris à moi, s'il vous plaît.
I will find you. That sounds
You know, Renee, it's one of these books that are gorgeous in many ways. And there's a couple of things we want to talk about. You are a believer, because you know it's okay to write poetry and it's okay to write rhyme if you get it right. Most people don't, and you're running against the tide here, but. If I'm not mistaken, you are an evangelist for loving poetry enough to have it affect the lyricism or the lyricalism or whatever of your prose when you write prose. And I want to get back to that. But first, let's talk about your life.
All right.
I thought you were born on the sea.
I was not. I was born, I'm from a little tiny town in upstate New York called Salem. One traffic light, 2,000 people, 8,000 cows. That's it. That's all there was. Had to drive 45 minutes to go see a movie. You know, I mean, we're talking dairy country, full on country, rural. I mean, I lived in town, so you know, I was a townie with the one traffic light. But yeah, so that's where I grew up. I grew up in the same house my dad grew up in. My parents met there. They got married there. Yeah, a lot of family history in that area. So I do have some nostalgia. Of course, you know, there comes a time when you kind of have to move on. There's not a lot of opportunity there. It never felt really like my place, you know, someplace that I could stay forever and ever. But I'm grateful to have grown up in the country. Cause I think.
Did you have cows in your life?
No, I had no farm cows in my life. I did not. We lived in town.
Because I have this image of, and it's not going to leave my head for the rest of this conversation. I apologize. Of your next book being cows doing ballet.
No, I have no plans. I have no plans for that.
Well, then we should sell that idea.
I'm sorry to disappoint.
We should story storm it, because I think that a book about cows.
Cows. I think I might find some other occupation for the cows, some other art. Okay.
Pas de mou. Okay. So you grew up in cow country, but you weren't a cowgirl. Yes. You weren't a cowgirl. When did you become a poetry and a showgirl?
Showgirl. Like I was in Vegas. I actually wrote my first poem when I was 7. I remember it very well. I was sitting in my dad's big, you know, black vinyl recliner, you know. My parents were had some friends over for cards, and I wrote my first poem called Whale in the Sea, and I was so proud of myself. I was just like, oh. So I got up and I showed it to them, and they're like, oh, you know, great job, and la la. And that was the beginning. I just kept writing, and I had notebooks full all through from 7 years old all through high school. And then I took a year off to be an exchange student, but then I went to college, and I stopped writing poetry for 20 years. The life was sucked out of it for me. I wrote a lot of free verse in high school. Free verse is my first love. I love free verse. And I think that's probably where my love of lyrical language comes from. It's not from rhyme. It's from it's from free verse and using poetic techniques in free verse. And I got to college and I realized, oh my goodness, I'm really bad at this. I'm just really, really bad at this. If you read anything from high school, which I hope no one ever does, you know, it's all this angsty stuff, lots of dead roses, you know, all that kind of thing. It's, you know, I'll read like Sylvia Plath's Juvenilia, and it's like, that's Juvenilia. How do you say it? Juvenilia. I'm like, that's what you wrote when you were 18. I'm like, okay, well, I'm just going to go crawl in my hole now, because that's embarrassing. Right. I mean, it's just like, it was amazing stuff. That wasn't me. So, you know, and I had a professor who you know, he encouraged me, but at the same time, there was just something about all that analysis and all of his weirdness, like his particular weirdness, that I just got turned off from poetry, and I just stopped writing for 20 years. And it wasn't until I discovered the Kid Lit world. No, that's Hold not on. True.
We're getting ahead of ourselves. What college? What did you major in?
Oh gosh. Okay. So, that's a twisted tale. I went to a college I didn't want to go to. I went to SUNY Plattsburgh for 3 years, and I did not like it. Because when I was in high school, I applied to only one college because I wanted to study French, actually. Yeah, I wanted to be an interpreter. And so I applied to one college and I got in, and then I took a year off to go to Brazil. And while I was there, things happened, and I ended up not being able to go to Nazareth College of Rochester, which is where I was going to go. I was all set. I was going to live in the French house, you know, with all the French students. And I was so excited, and that didn't work out. So I ended up going to this place, and I was an English major, and then I didn't like that, and so I became a theater major, and I loved that. But after 3 years, I quit. I had a wonderful mentor while I was there, a wonderful English gentleman named Mr. Salmon. He was a visiting professor. And, you know, we would go to lunch and we would chat. And he's like, he said, darling, darling, I have no idea what you're doing here. Why don't you leave this two-bit town and go do something else? He was against my love of musical theater. You know, he's like, you need to go write the next American, your great American novel. I'm like, really? Oh, okay, well. But anyways, I did take his advice. I quit college and I moved to New York. So that's how that happened. And I finished my college career at Marymount Manhattan College, which I adored, with a BFA in acting and directing. So I just kind of switched. Yeah. So I had kind of a long college career, a good 5 years with some.
Because I'm a lover of classic musicals. So what? Just give me one or two or three of your favorite classic musicals.
Well, I also love some classic musicals. Guys and Dolls is right up there. I absolutely love Guys and Dolls. Always have. Some of the classics I don't like it.
This episode is brought to you by Twizzlers. Long day, late night, feeling a little bored. Twizzlers is the ultimate sidekick for any moment of the day, no matter what kind of day you're having. The perfect level of sweet and a fun excuse to sit back and relax. Unwind with Twizzlers. To buy now, visit Hersheyland.com/Twizzlers.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
I got a horse right here. His name is Paul Revere.
And the weather's and if the weather's clear.
Can do. This guy says the horse
can do. Yeah, haven't seen. I always wanted to be Adelaide, you know.
Oh, Adelaide.
Adelaide's Lament is going to be like the best.
It says here.
And also, you know, because I grew up near Saratoga. So they changed the line to be Saratoga instead of whatever it was in the original, you know. And they get off at Saratoga for the 14th time. That one, you know, when she's complaining about
a poison.
Can develop a cold, la grippe. Yes. So
post-nasal drip. Next time we're on, we're going to do Guys and Dolls.
We're just going to do show tunes. You'll have to invite Elizabeth Law, though. So.
She's been on the show about three times. I got no trouble.
Well, there you go. We got to do some more. Although her knowledge of the theater goes way beyond mine.
Yeah.
The classical. So that would be my favorite classic musical theater. Yeah.
I wish I could have Frank Lesser on the show.
Yeah. Wow.
What a guy. Able to write this, you know, the words and the music. Incredible. We'll have another separate.
Well, that's another story.
Yeah. Not all our favorite ones, just Guys and Dolls.
Just Guys and Dolls, yeah.
And then we can talk about the other ones.
Yeah.
Like West Side Story and so on.
Yeah, of course.
Show tunes, and then what happened? You ended up in Europe.
So I did my BFA in theater.
How did you fall in love with Kidlet?
Yeah. Okay. Well, that happened while I was in Italy. I did my BFA in theater. I had a little theater company in New York for a few years with a, you know, blah, blah, blah. I mean, tiny, like little tiny, you know, like 8 million little tiny theater companies that are like, that, you know.
That's incredible.
Well, not really. I mean, we just did a few, you know, shows and I directed and whatever. I love directing. That was my thing.
I'm sure you did. But what was the name of the company?
Oh, it was called the Sun Ensemble. I started it with... a friend of mine from college, and we did a few shows. He was an actor.
That's incredible. That's incredible.
I mean, Mel.
Yeah.
You know, little tiny theater companies in New York are a dime a dozen, and that's pretty much how much money we made too. So, you know. But anyways, after a few years, I realized this theater thing, I don't have enough passion to really follow it. I love it. It's in my blood, but it's just, and so I went back to NYU and got my MA in English education and became an English teacher. I did that for a couple of years in New York. And then in the summer of 2001, I said, you know what, I'm going to go to Italy with some friends, because I want to see the Palio in Siena, you know, the horse race in Siena. And so we did. And while I was there, I thought, you know, I can't come to Italy and not put my toes in the Mediterranean. So I went to the bus station. I spoke just a little. I always like to study the language a little bit before I go to a country, but I didn't know a lot, but I knew enough, you know, to get around. So I go to the bus station. I said, I just send me to the sea. I had no idea where to go. So I just said to the ticket guy, send me to the sea. And he was like, okay. And he gave me a ticket. And I got on the bus and I ended up at the sea. And it was this gorgeous medieval town, gorgeous, gorgeous, with a castle up on the hill and the sea. And oh, and it was wonderful. But I didn't know how things worked in Italy. Here they have all the stabilimenti, you know, with the umbrellas on the beach, and you have to like pay to get the umbrella. So I kept going from one to the next, and then the lifeguards were like, no, this one's for the hotel. If you're not a guest, keep going down, you'll find one. So I kept going down. The last one with the umbrellas was open for everybody. I staked my claim on an umbrella, went to the bar to get a cappuccino, an iced cappuccino, which of course in Italy, they don't know what the hell that is. And the barman is now my husband. So long story short, yeah, that was the end of that. So I went back to New York, and it was September, September 11, right? It was that 2001. And I was teaching, and September 11 happened, and he called me from Italy, and, you know, I was walking home across the Triborough Bridge, and he just decided, you know what, I'm going to come there. So he came, and I quit my teaching job. We did a coast-to-coast road trip, and then I moved to Italy, and that was it. So, yeah, between meeting him in July and moving here in January, yeah, 6 month kind of whirlwind thing. And I've been here ever since.
In the same town, or you moved towns?
In Italy. Yeah, pretty much this area, pretty much this year. I mean, we moved here and there to, you know, but always in the same area.
And once a year, you go to the beach to the same bar where you met.
It doesn't exist anymore. They tore it down. I know. Bummer. We went back to visit, and there's nothing there. It's like, oh, all right, well.
So you stayed in Italia.
I had to find something to do for work, right? So there was this thing called Elance, which was an online job, kind of like Upwork, you know, one of those things. And I just discovered it, and I started doing editing. I'm like, why didn't I ever do editing? I'm like, I've always done, you know, proofreading other people's papers at college and that kind of thing. And it's something that I enjoy. And I met a woman on there and did some work for her. And I have been with them for 16 years. She's like my main client. And it was through her, All About Learning Press, that I began to write for kids, because they do All About Reading and All About Spelling, which are programs for homeschool market to teach kids how to read and spell. And she's like, why don't you do a collection of poems for our preschool program? I was like, all right. And so I wrote 40 poems. I was like, oh yeah, I used to write poetry. I totally forgot. And that's the first time I began writing poetry again. It was because of her. That was in 2010. And then I didn't even know that Kidlit existed at that time. I was like, people write for kids? Like, that's a thing that you can do as a living? And I started my blog, my poetry blog, No Water River, and boom, I met Lee Bennett Hopkins, and I met J. Patrick Lewis through my blog, and I interviewed people much like you. And I just got to know all these wonderful poets, and this new career was born. Yeah, it's kind of weird, actually. How it all kind of worked out, you know?
It's a wonderful story.
The routes that we take and the ones that we don't.
Right, exactly. So let's talk a bit about lyrical writing. I don't want to get too much into poetry. We can get into a little bit. Let me ask you about your poetry. Is this your innate ability in terms of rhyme and meter? Is it something you learn? I'm of the opinion that you can't really learn meter and rhyme if you don't have a natural gift for it. It's like being a musician. Am I right or wrong? Renee, I hope you answer the question. Are you thinking about it? You're not moving on me. Oy vey. Well, hi, everybody.
Can you hear me?
Now I can hear you.
You're back. Are you back?
You're back. We were both gone for a second.
Yeah, you were gone too. You were like.
And you were like. Okay, now you're gone again.
I was thinking, wait a minute, you're not frozen. Oh, no.
No, we're out. Now I'm not. Are you frozen? I can see you.
Okay, no, I'm good. All right. It's going a little bit in and out. So if it happens again, you know, I'll just keep talking until I come back.
Okay.
Hopefully it's not my fault on this side.
No, I don't think it's your fault. I'm going to move this table a bit because maybe it'll give me a little bit of better internet. Okay. Nope.
What was the question? Oh, we were talking about whether
is rhyme and meter a gift or a something that you
or a
studied?
Skill? Is it a gift or a skill?
Yeah, but I want the answer in two sentences.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. Honestly, with me, it's innate. I just naturally have meter. I never learned it. I just know it. It's just rhythm. It's just like an innate rhythm that some people have, and they can hear it and they see it. And then there are other people who really just can't even hear stressed beats and words. I do think it can be learned, which is, I teach it, right? I do think it can be learned to a certain extent. I have had students who really cannot pick it up, and that's okay because it's not a necessary skill to write for children, you know, but I want to write in rhymes. And I always ask why, you know, why? Because it's not necessary. Free verse is a gorgeous thing. I prefer it to rhyme. Like that, my first book as a rhyming book is funny to me because it's the only one I've ever written. I write in free verse. I write free verse picture books and verse novel, you know? And yeah, so I do think it can be learned to an extent if you already have some rhythm in you. And then if it really isn't something that you can learn, then don't worry about it, you know, because there's so many poetic techniques that you can use that have nothing to do with rhyme that are going to make your writing poetic regardless. So, yeah, I do think it's a little bit of each.
But you think that we writers should have some feel for the poetic line.
Yes.
In order to help us with our lyrical writing.
Absolutely. Not just lyrical writing, any writing, because, you know, if you're reading a book, there's a rhythm in the book and it's a prose book. You could be reading Stephen King. There's a rhythm in there, though. You know, there's a reason that this sentence has this many words in it because he felt it. You know, the writer feels that if I add that extra word, it's already too long. Like I can hear it. You know, if I'm writing something, I'm like, yeah, that just seems to be like kind of clunky or it's going on too long. You know, if it's clunky, it's probably my word choice. You know, I can do something to make it more interesting, make it, you know, rhythm is just important in all writing. And we learn rhythm, you know, through studying poetry and music and all that other good stuff, not just poetry, music, dance, whatever, any art, honestly, I think can help you.
I believe that language is music. So in that sense, you're right. The other thing that touched me in your story is the theater. I think it was Ellen Johnston who wrote a few years ago that a picture book is theater. And that is like one of the wonderful things in that intermission spread, like you showed where you have the curtain, you know, this is a theater for me to you. You're the audience. Yeah. Somebody is reading. It's like a reading. So if you want to comment on that, I'd be happy.
Whether it's like a theater? You mean
yeah, to what extent a picture book is theater? It certainly is in your ballet.
Well, it is in my ballet because, I mean, they're putting on a performance. So it's literally a theatrical performance.
No, but would you say that the same way you teach people to have this lyrical sense
mm-hmm.
that derives from poetry when they're writing a picture book, well, maybe they should also have a theatrical sense?
Well, I think you do need a theatrical sense. I'm always telling my students to add some drama. And it's as simple as using punctuation to add drama in a poem, like the famous dash, you know, Emily Dickinson, you know, didn't use it for nothing. It's drama. So I'm always saying, you know, you need to add some drama here. So yes, I approach things, you know, becoming from a theater standpoint, I do approach things in like just kind of naturally in acts, like here's my opening act or my opening scene, let's say more in scenes, I guess it would be for a picture book. Here's my opening scene. All right, I've introduced these people. Here's my next scene, but where is my build? You know, where's that conflict? Where's that build? And then you have, in this case, it's an intermission, but normally you would have, you know, the climax, which would not be an intermission is kind of the anti-climax, isn't it? You know, it's like, oh, well, now I'm not going to do anything. So that was kind of a switch in my book. Whereas, you know, you would want to have the climax in this one is nothing. You know, it's like nothing. There's nothing there. You have the denouement, right?
Yeah.
One of my favorite words, denouement. you know, where it's got to come down and you have your closing scene, you know, your resolution. So yes, I mean a story structure is the same as a play structure practically, you know. So that is like a theater production. Yes. I mean, my theater collection.
But I'm going to see you and raise you because
you mean raise
you. Yeah, because picture books are theater in the sense that somebody is reading the story to you.
Oh, okay. Maybe I didn't get this question quite. This is true.
I didn't phrase it properly. So when I saw what you did in that book, I'm saying, oh, you know, we all have to be more theatrical in our writing. Maybe not to the extent of Act One and intermission and Act Two.
Right.
But to keep this in mind, that this is a play in the sense that a parent or grandparent or teacher or librarian is actually
going to be read aloud. Okay. You're talking about because it has to be read aloud.
Well, it's like, you know, you're putting on the book.
You are putting on a book. Absolutely. I love reading books aloud. You know, I read everything. I just love reading aloud. But yes, there's nothing worse than a flat reading. So, you know, if you're writing it, you know, is theatrical and poetic, theatrical, dramatic. Let's say dramatic, you know, that's going to make it a lot easier for the reader to really get into it. But, you know, I think that the onus here is also on the reader. You know, not everybody has a theater background and can do all the voices and, you know, I mean, the reader has the job of bringing that book to life. I mean, the writer can only do so much, you know, it's words on a page, but the reader.
Renee, I love this.
Collaborator.
The NBA playoffs are back. And on FanDuel, new customers can bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. Back in the day, news like this, your crew would have been writing each other letters.
Dearest Benjamin, wonderful news from the East. The spread has been covered.
Or maybe you'd use your phone to actually call someone.
Man, you see that dunk? Man, I saw that dunk.
But these days, it's all about the group chat.
I love that high-fiving kitten emoji.
No matter how you tell them, let your crew know that all new FanDuel customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. Ooh, Morse code. Classic. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
This episode is brought to you by Bai. It's Wonder Water. What makes Bai so great? It's simple. From raspberry lemon lime by Sydney Sweeney to Zambia Bing Cherry and Palavo Pineapple Mango, Bai has antioxidants, electrolytes, and no artificial sweeteners. So for flavorful hydration, choose Bai. It's Wonder Water. Learn more about Bai and discover all of the exotic, bold flavors at drinkbai.com.
When I get very lucky, then I have an interview with somebody like you, and we talk about something that I've never talked about, never really thought about. And so I'd like you to think of a picture book that you love, that, because what I'm thinking is, if you are a parent, right, who has a theatrical bent, mm-hmm. right, then, mm-hmm. yeah, you're going to put on the play when you read it for the child.
Yeah.
But what if you're not? Then you need the author to go that extra kilometer and to make it easy for you to be the actor.
Well, you know, I would posit that if a book is published, the writer probably already did her job, right? The drama's in there. The elements are in there. If the book is published, well, I'm just going to assume that that's a good book. Okay, sometimes it's not. We all know that. We'll just, the elephant in the room. Okay, it happens. It's okay. Let's just forget about that small percentage. All right. I go to the books on my show.
It's a good thing you're not interviewing me today. That's all I can say.
Okay. That's another conversation. So I go to the books on my shelf. I pull off any old book. I open it up. I know it's been published. I bought it. So, you know, I obviously had an interest in it. It's well written. That's why it's published. So I think that the writer's already done her job, Mel. I mean, you know, it's already done. Yes, if you do need to add those things in there for the eventual reader. A picture book is a collaboration between, you know, the writer and the editor and the publisher and the eventual reader. You know, because there's nothing worse.
But Renee,
if someone's going to read my book, Turtle Spiral in Between, a seahorse pair glides on the scene. I mean, that's depressing. You know, the reader needs to needs to step it up. I don't know how else to answer this question.
Because I never asked it before, and I never really thought about it enough. And that's why I love these interviews.
Yeah, I feel like I'm babbling a little bit.
No, but babble away, because maybe what poetry does. Okay, I'm going to. I've interviewed about 150 authors, into editors, agents, illustrators. Okay, there isn't such a thing as a book that can't be improved.
Okay, yes, I can. Yeah,
even books that are perfect can still be more than perfect.
Yeah.
And I'm not the person to critique or talk about that, except that, you know, like at night when nobody's looking, I say, oh, you know, this page turn could work better.
But
there's so many things that an author has to be aware of when they're writing. So
I mean, there's stuff in the Crab Ballet where I'm like, yeah, I think that could have been better.
No, I think it's wonderful, but there's so many things, you know. Throwing the ball up for the illustrator, and having what you talk about, the lyrical line, and Ellen is right. We don't. And even if we have a theater, you know, the theater in our minds, maybe sometimes we can make it more so.
Yeah.
You know, like if you asked me now to think of a theatrical picture book, okay, yeah. where the author makes it easy for the parents. So there's the book with no words. Right, where the parent has to make a fool of himself, and there's Robert Munch's books, Robert Munch, Mortimer, you know, thump 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 thump. You can't get that wrong.
Yeah, yeah. Well, my favorite read aloud is the classic, The Gruffalo.
You give me boost gumps.
Your boost gumps.
You just gave me boost gumps.
I mean, I use it in my class. It's a classic, you know, I use a lot of, you know, things that more recently published things, but that is a staple that I will always use because for me, it's perfection. It's a little bit of perfection. I would improve that. I don't know how I would improve.
My students who aspire to be to use meter and rhyme but don't have the skill or don't have the innate ability say to me, "Oh, but Julia Donaldson, she wrote the Gruffalo," and I don't know if you're going to believe this, but I mean it's like your trip to Italy. I actually had coffee with Julia. I just actually ran into her in a coffee house in Athens. And I didn't, this was my
life. What are the odds?
Well, zero to a million.
Okay.
And it was like, hi, I'm Mel. Hi, I'm Julia. Nice to meet you. Costas over here told me that you write picture books. I don't know if I've ever told this story in public. And I say, well, what kind of books do you write, Julia? And she says, well, I guess I'm best known for a story called The Gruffalo. And I'm like, oh no, my God, you're Julia Donaldson. And she says, yeah. I say, no, you're not Julia Donaldson. This cannot be happening. But it was. And one of the remarkable things about Julia, other than she's wonderful, nice, and you know, I spent a wonderful hour with her. So thank you, God, if you're up there, is that she wrote songs for the BBC. Her first book was a song turned into a picture book. So I came out of that. Okay. So I tell my students, if you're not a songwriter, if you're not a poet, don't get into this. I mean, who is Julia Donaldson? There's only one like her. Sorry, you got me off on this tangent.
No, that was very interesting. I mean, just kind of an amazing little moment that you had there in Athens of, you know, just.
So the Gruffalo is terrific.
Well, I mean, that is like one of the most theatrical books ever. I mean, me as a parent, I mean, I have a voice for every character. There's the rhythm of it. And I love doing those voices. And, you know, it's just, it's in my bones now. I mean, I have three kids and I've read that thing 8 million times. Also the Italian translation of it, I got against my will because I'm like, the translator was just incredible. It's like a mirror image but in another language. I do not know how she did it. It just blows my mind. So yeah, so that one to me is a great example of perfect book and theatrical. You know, you've got all those scenes built one on top of the other.
But Renee, this is my mind-blowing take from this conversation. Maybe everybody else knows it and they'll say, oh, you know, this is, you're trifling with something that everybody knows. But when you write something, the Crab Ballet, okay, when you write it in your wonderful meter and your rhyme and you're winking with the French, and you are essentially, when you are doing your job, and you're doing your job marvelously in this book, Renee, is you're making it easy for the parent to be a thespian, a theater person. And that maybe that's what Julia is doing so marvelously in the Gruffalo, is that she turns every mama and papa in the world into a theatrical figure.
Yeah.
I never thought of that.
Well, neither have I. So this is the first time I've thought of this too. So that's
hence the babbling.
We're working it out, Mel.
I need you in my life. I'm going to come visit you in Italia.
Go ahead.
So what other, you know, you've published all of these, shall I call them trade educational books for children, using language and working within all kinds of frameworks to produce lovely books. You have this gorgeous book out. You have a book of poems, like a middle grade level, I think, coming out with Charles Bridge next year.
Yeah, which is also theater themed.
Yeah, Limelight.
And that is another show. It's another show. It goes from audition process to the final curtain. Yeah, it's a whole show. Yeah.
I'm going to have to do some revising now of my stories after this conversation. Wow. So what other advice do you have? A sentence on your program for Lyrical Language Lab. Lovely language alliteration lab.
Yes, the Lyrical Language Lab,
Okay.
It's just my online course. 2024 is my 10-year anniversary. So shout out to Lyrical Language Lab. It's still going strong. So that's nice. It's just, you know, it's a language level course, which is what I love. It's not about teaching people how to write a picture book. Because I'm not that person. I'm not the person to teach anybody how to write a picture book. Because I find them very, very, very difficult.
I'm not sure anybody can teach you how to write a picture.
Yeah, I mean, it's like really. I'm talking plot. You know, I'm a poet, so plot. I'm plot challenged, which is why I love poem picture books. I just love them. That's my favorite thing in the whole world.
Okay, and then you have Peek and Seek.
Peek and Critique.
Okay.
Peek and Sneak. Although Peek and Sneak, that might be another skill altogether. I don't know. Peek and Critique. Yeah, that's my YouTube channel, which is free lessons and revision for everybody. I give lessons on the meters. I still have to do dactyl meter. I hope in 2024 I can get back to doing it. You know, and that's where I take people submit stuff and I just look at it on the spot online and I just I critique it right there on video. Done. I mean, these people are super brave. I have to say thank you to all the people who have ever sent me stuff and says, yeah, go ahead and put it online for the entire world to see. Super brave and, you know, just wonderful that they do this and they put themselves out there. And yeah, and so people can go and learn a lot on there for free. And I really want to keep that going because, you know, people, I think really crave, you know, they people who want to write in rhyme can be, you know, feel very lost. I think, you know, like, I don't understand. And it's like, it is understandable and it can be learned. So yeah. So that would be my first stop for people. YouTube.
Wonderful. So, I think it's wonderful that you've reached this very high level of international acclaim. You have poetry and all kinds of books. No, I mean you are an industry name now. Let's now we have to start closing.
Yes,
and we're going to throw everybody away and have our little after party. Tête à tête. And what other pieces of advice do you have for aspiring picture book writers?
That is a hard question, Mel, because like I said, I have a hard time writing picture books myself. I think my best advice isn't so much about writing as it is about revising. And who you're surrounding yourself with when you revise. You know, this is the major piece of advice I ever give anybody on anything, whether they're writing picture books or poetry or whatever else, is, you know, you get it down on paper. Okay, we all know that, just bleh, right? Get it down there. And then the real work is in revision, as we all know. But it's not just that. It's like, I cannot work in a void. Like I need, you know, critique groups and things like that. And my major advice is always to surround yourself with people who are better than you. And that, you know, might sound a little weird, like, well, what do you mean better than me? It's like, no, you know, you're not going to learn. You need to make sure you have people around you who can give you feedback who are at your level or higher, better. Because they're going to challenge you, you know, they're going to make you better. They're going to make you strive to get where they are. And you know, I have a wonderful critique group and they've published a lot more than I have. And I look and I'm like, well, what did you do? You know, and that helps me get up there, you know, but at the same time, extend a hand, you know, to other people who are not where you are yet. Because in doing so, in teaching, you learn better your own craft, you know? And so you kind of have to have a hand in both fields here, right? But for me, it's surround yourself with people who are just going to challenge you to be and to write your best, because it's very easy, at least for me, I'm a little bit of a lazy writer, to be like, yeah, that's good enough. Yeah, but it's not good enough. Nothing, it should never be good enough. If you're saying it's good enough, it's not good enough. It just isn't. So you got to get somebody who's going to challenge you to be better. And that honestly is like, I would not have any other advice, honestly, like, oh, well, you should, you know, do your plot like this. I have no idea. I just know that in the revision process, get somebody who's going to challenge you to go as far as you possibly can. You know,
this is great advice. What I'm inferring, and I never thought of this, is that we are like a human chain, this writer group.
Yeah.
And what you say, it's like, you know, we're climbing a mountain together and it's slippery. And we know that less than 1,000 manuscripts ever gets published. And it's depressing and we get rejected hundreds of times. And what you're saying is so beautiful, that we're like a human chain.
Yeah.
And it's important to help move people along.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's beneficial on both sides, though, you know.
Yeah,
I love teaching because I learn more.
Yeah. Well, when I didn't know so much until I started teaching. That was my big revelation. I started teaching and said, oh, I don't know. Can I say the word shit on my own show?
It's your show.
Yeah. I was at SCBWI in New York and I came back and I said to my wife, I didn't know shit. And the moment you realize you don't know shit is when the shit happens. And then you can learn. This has been a remarkably teaching, illuminating interview for me. And I hope for so many people who are going to watch it and you're going to share it. And we're going to leave everybody and come back. And I'm going to thank you, Renee M. Latulippe, for this marvelous interview. Congratulations on this marvelous book that really is completely between many boxes. The Crab Ballet, published last year by Cameron Books, Abrams, wonderfully illustrated by Cécile Metzger, and we'll reach out to her.
Metzger. Oh, later in the year, I might be doing a webinar on how I revised this. So
we'll be all ears.
Keep your eyes peeled.
We'll keep our eyes and ears peeled.
Again, revision is all everything.
It's never ending. We'll save that for next time. Revisions will be our next topic.
Yes, we have lots of things to talk about. Mel, this was great. I had so much fun. Thank you. Thank you for letting me babble.
It's all about babbling. When I have an interviewee like you, I can't hear you now.
Something. Can you hear me now? Yeah. Can you hear me now?
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
When interviewees babble, I have the best time, and I think that the interviews turn out the best.
Well, let's hope so.
and you're a born babbler.
Thank you. Oh, that's high praise.
We still have guys and dolls. Okay, so everybody. Bye-bye to the world. I'm Mel Rosenberg, the host of the Children's Literature Channel of the New Books Network, Lucky Little Me, and I've been speaking with the wonderful Renee M. Latulippe. Renee, until we meet again, which is in 1 minute.
Au revoir.
Au revoir, but we'll be back in a minute without the riffraff.
Oh,
bye everybody.